The movie musical Everybody's Talking About Jamie is a coming-out story with some familiar contours. Drab, working-class town, outcast teenager with a doting mother and distant father. Climactic moment of self-actualization which turns the community's bigoted rejection into joyous acceptance. That is not a spoiler, that is just a genre staple. But the titular Jamie, the one everyone is talking about, he is not coming out as queer. He's out to everyone when the film starts. No, Jamie's coming out as a drag queen, and his guide along that journey, his lace-front Virgil, if you will, is the great Richard E. Grant. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're discussing Everybody is Talking About Jamie on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision, kind of like choosing to listen to your favorite song on repeat. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Joining me from his home in New York is culture critic and reporter Mark Blankenship. He is also the co-author of the book Madonna, A to Z. Welcome back, Mark.
Hello, Glenn. It's great to be back.
That's always great to have you. Everybody's Talking About Jamie doesn't have your typical splashy, sudsy musical pedigree. It's an adaptation of a successful West End production, yes, but that show was in turn based on a British TV documentary about a 16-year-old drag queen in Sheffield, England. Young Jamie is played by a very charismatic Max Harwood and dreams of becoming a drag queen. In this, he is supported completely by his mother, played by Sarah Lancashire, his best friend Pretty, played by Lauren Patel, and his aforementioned drag mother, Loco Chanel, played by Grant. His path to freedom and self-expression is a rocky one, of course, blocked by his homophobic father, played by Ralph Ianson, and by a homophobic bully, played by Samuel Bottomley. The great Sharon Horgan is also on hand. As Jamie's teacher, she's sort of splitting the difference for most of the film. It's directed by Jonathan Butterall, who also directed the theatrical production. The book and lyrics for that musical are by Tom McRae, with music by Dan Gillespie Sells. The movie is in theaters and is also streaming on Amazon Prime. So, Mark, will you be a member of the cohort of those who are, we are reliably informed, talking about Jamie?
Well, yes, I will be happy to talk about Jamie, but perhaps I want to talk about Jamie less than every other person who seems to know Jamie, because they seem to only talk about Jamie. But I'm not sorry to have met Jamie, and I'm happy that I saw Jamie both on stage a few years ago and in this film.
No, I get it, because there certainly are two threads going on in this thing throughout. There is the Jamie, you're special, Jamie, you're strong, don't let anybody put you down, Jamie, you're a fierce and fabulous magical unicorn person, Jamie. And that is the familiar thread in queer coming of age, coming out stories. And look, there's a very good and affirming, and not to put too fine a point on it, potentially life-saving reason for that, which is that kids under threat need to hear that they're valued. And this time it comes with Richard E. Grant as his drag mother. What's going to be wrong with that? But there's another thread in here that I find a lot more intriguing, because it's such a difficult thing to navigate and keep your audience on your protagonist's side. And that once Jamie tries drag, he becomes convinced he's better than everyone around him. Not different, not even special, but definitely better, which is the sentiment of this fantastic opening number, where everyone around him is his backup dancer and he's the star.
And you don't even know it. There's a path I've planned.
And you don't even know it.
To the promised land.
And you don't even know it.
You won't understand.
And you don't even know it.
Because you're my backing band.
And you don't even know it.
And it's the Jamie Show.
Over the course of the film, he internalizes that sentiment. At the top, it's kind of played like a joke. But here, over the course of the film, he really does internalize it. That's something you have to deal with in the movie. And when you try to do it with just nothing but a one-dimensional bully, you get at something real, but it flattens everything. It's too heavy-handed, which is why, for me anyway, when you place Sharon Horgan in the middle of this film as the voice of, I don't want to say reason, but certainly practicality, she pushes back against Jamie's self-centeredness. And I think you deliver something that's a lot more suited to the intimacy of film and television, as opposed to what I would imagine would be the play to the balcony impulse of musical theater, where that character, I think, would probably be larger. Is that fair to say?
I feel like that, in the best of my recollection, Sharon Horgan has found a much more subtle way of creating this teacher's presence in the story, because on the West End, as I recall, she was very much a I don't know if you're familiar with the character of Miss Honey in the musical version of Matilda, but
sure.
It's just the idea of the teacher who just wants everyone to be happy and is pushing back, but is also trying to uplift everyone. And Sharon Horgan, I don't think, is capable of doing the sort of sticky sweet sentimentality that you might have found in the West End version of this show with regard to this character. And I think that it's great to hear you refer to her as the voice of practicality, because even though by the end of the movie, I feel like she kind of slides into being a guardian of middle-class respectability for like one or two scenes, for the most part, she is the voice in this story that is saying, hey, just because your most elaborate dreams aren't always going to come true, that doesn't mean that your life is going to be meaningless and you deserve to have things to look forward to, even if you're not going to become a football star or a pop singer or a drag queen. And it's kind of a refreshingly unexpected perspective to get in a movie like this, where typically the story is just dream it and you'll become it.
Right. And I should say, I am coming to this completely fresh. Haven't heard the cast album, didn't see the West End production. But I don't know. I think about the Sharon Horgan character a lot, because in the script, she does a lot of stuff that are the hallmarks of a villain. She gives a kid a leaflet to work in a meat rendering plant. She shames Jamie, literally shames Jamie, by making him walk in makeup through the school. And then she refuses to let him come to prom and address. In the theater, I think that reads as code for a villain, one who has the potential for a change of heart at the end, because let's face it, that's what this is. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's my age, or maybe it's just Horgan's performance. But I kept thinking, listen to her. She's got a point. I mean, the idea is to locate yourself in society, not reject society outright. Mm. There is a new song introduced here that wasn't in the West End production. It is sung by Richard E. Grant. And you have some thoughts about that song.
Yes, I'm so glad that you mentioned this new song. It's called This Was Me, which is not to be confused with This Is Me from The Greatest Showman.
Betty Davis doing Joan of Arc. Dirty glamour dancing in the dark on days that wouldn't die. When we felt like we could fly. It was real love.
In the song This Was Me, Loco Chanel talks to Jamie about her own past as a drag superstar in her town. And what happens is that we get sucked into what looks like a VHS quality, grainy old movie of the late 80s and early 90s, where we see the younger version of Richard E. Grant's character in his queer community. I'm using the pronouns interchangeably just based on when the character is and isn't in drag.
Sure.
It's really, I think, quite powerful, because we actually then see modern day Richard E. Grant and Jamie watching from the sidelines and sometimes even participating, dancing with people in the street and things like that. And to me, it's a really exhilarating, and I actually found emotionally quite devastating, moment of seeing gay history become a through line and watching Jamie get invited to be part of a lineage and a legacy, which is so powerful in this film, where one of the major problems for Jamie is that his father refuses to allow him into his own life. Mm-hmm. So to see, oh, look, here's this actual literal manifestation of a family. And one of the things that I found really touching about it also is that there are some vocals added by Holly Johnson, who is part of Frankie Goes to Hollywood. So you've actually got the sound of gay history in this track. And then we get to Jamie's response after he has this experience. He's talking about it with Pretty, and he talks about how he realizes that being a drag queen is more than just being fabulous, that it's actually being part of something. And this is what he says to Pretty about that.
You know, some of them died. Like, literally, they died. And the rest of them still kept on fighting.
What do you think they were fighting for, Jamie? For the future. And that's you.
So, Glenn, I don't know about you, but for me, that moment sort of encapsulates my entire experience with this film, where on the one hand, I'm really moved and I'm really excited by all of the positivity. But then on the other hand, I think, is it really all about you? Did all of this happen so that you, Jamie, could do this?
Yeah.
I don't know if you felt yourself torn between those two things, but I kept having those simultaneous experiences like in every scene.
I lived for those scenes when Jamie got slapped down a bit. this is why I love Sharon Horgan in this, because she's there to say, if you go to prom and a dress, that night becomes about you, and all these kids want to remember prom in their own way. That makes sense to me. It does not come off as a homophobic institution denying self-expression. It's about saying, look, the world is wider than you, but I agree that number, the Richard E. Grant number, works. Not necessarily the vocals all the time on Grant's part, but, who's going to begrudge him that? He's brilliant. But the montage that you mentioned that accompanies that song, I was going to say is restrained, but there's nothing restrained about the way it tries to lunge down your throat and grab your heart. It is incredibly effective, I will say that. It's so assured and confident. And then, yes, I agree, it is completely undercut by the scene following there where it's more, Jamie, you're a special snowflake. Do you have a favorite number? Is that number your favorite?
Oh, hands down, that is my favorite number. It was the one that was the most cinematically surprising. I found the lyrics to be the most affecting. And it's not even in the original show, but it is now my favorite song from this particular property.
Yes, the fact that it wasn't in the original show and it is so effective have led some cynics, including producer Jessica Reedy, to suggest it's an Oscar grab. It's an attempt to be a Best Original Song.
Well, I think if that were to be the case and we got a Best Original Song nominee that looks pretty bluntly at the highs and lows of being a gay man during the AIDS era or the first wave of the AIDS era, great.
Yep.
Okay. Not mad about it.
I mean, for me, it's that opening number, and you don't even know it. I think it is very tough for the rest of the musical to kind of reach that pitch, because that is, as the wise philosopher Anya the Demon once said, that could be a breakaway hit. If we lived in a different time, in a different world, that could be a breakaway hit, because it's not a book number, right? What it's expressing is so pure and universal to the teenage experience.
Right.
And definitely to the queer experience. I'm not undercutting that, but there is something pure and essential and so joyous about that.
It really is. And that is a moment where Jamie's confidence hasn't curdled into being gross.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons that it's such an exciting moment, because there's an innocence to it. And I feel like the movie is kind of a teen wish fulfillment movie, where you hear that some people might say the world doesn't revolve around you, but secretly they're wrong. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I, as a teenager, would have wanted this story too. And
sure.
So as an adult, I'm annoyed by that, but not that annoyed by that, if you know what I mean.
I can't begrudge it, right? I mean, yes, Jamie single-handedly cures homophobia at the end of the film. Sure. So if you wanted to place this in context, as I mentioned at the top, there have been a lot of films like this with this same energy, the same vibe, where something happens to a drab working class town. Where would you place it?
Right. So and watching it, you do think, okay, this is Billy Elliot. Probably the Kinky Boots shoe factory is down the street. Probably the dudes from the Full Monty are stripping like three blocks over.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I found really exciting about this, and if I may be an old softy for a minute, the fact that Jamie enters this story already being out,
yeah,
and a lot of people in his town are already fine with that, to me, speaks to a certain type of progress that I was hoping for as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it really moving that, although on some level the conflict is about his dad's inability to accept him, on a larger level, it isn't that at all. It's really, I think, about what you were saying about Jamie learning how to integrate this power that he has into the rest of his life in a helpful and generous way. And that is a nice shift.
I completely agree. It did make me feel old, but in a good way. And that rarely happens.
Yes. We got old so that younger people could get to do this.
Go on and cure homophobia, kids. Do it for us. We want to know what you think about Everybody's Talking About Jamie. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. Mark, thank you so much for being here.
A pleasure as ever.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all tomorrow, when we will be talking about Lil Nas X's album Montero.